I'm Stephanie Shelton, and this is Conversations on Health, How We Get There. We're going to talk more now about the U.S. healthcare system, if you can call it a system, and make some basic comparisons to those in Europe. We'll go deeper into the various parts of our system as the episodes of our podcast progress. In episode 3, you heard from my friend Pam about her nightmare experiences in Northeast Florida, just trying to get a family doctor or primary care physician who knew something about her medical history, about her health issues. I started out this podcast with a conversation on the Czech system, where everyone there has health coverage. They pay into the system, it's mandatory, unless you aren't working, in which case the government pays, and that is very similar to other European countries.
The most important thing about Medicaid is it's a welfare program. It is not an insurance program. It is not a contributory program. It is not something that involves employers. It's a welfare program. It's like
this is Dr. Richard Saltman, the podcast research expert. He's Professor Emeritus of Health Policy and Management, Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta. He's consulted widely for WHO, OECD, and the World Bank. He's written or edited 24 books and over 170 articles and book chapters on health policy topics. There's much more on his resume. And full disclosure, Richard is also my brother, which helps. Much like my experiences in the Czech Republic, Richard has spent a lot of time in Sweden, which has one of the best-known publicly funded healthcare systems. Richard, when you think about European and Nordic models, how would you describe the U.S. healthcare system? And really, can you describe it in the same sense you would describe a European system?
Very good question. It's a complicated set of relationships. All health systems have three dimensions that are linked together but operate separately. One is the funding or the financing. The second is the delivery, the running of the hospitals, the characteristics of the doctors. Are they public employees, civil servants? Or are they private doctors, general practitioners in particular? How does that work? So that's the second category, the delivery side. And then the third category is the governance. How do you make policy? Who makes decisions? And who steers the system? And when you look at Sweden and compare it with the United States, what you see is quite a radically different set of characteristics. First, in terms of funding, the Swedish system is funded on three different levels, three different tax rates that are paid by each individual citizen and taxpayer. On the local level, municipal government for social care, for several other related services like housing. On the county level, which a county council in Sweden is roughly 300,000 people, just two of the three tax payments that you make for your public services in Sweden, which include the healthcare system, already is over 30% of your income. Then you pay national taxes. And the national taxes are on a sliding scale, and the national government then has a whole range of subsidies and payments, cross payments between the different counties and for particular services. So there's three different levels. When you look at the United States, actually, you have something similar in that we pay to city governments, which run city hospitals. You pay to state governments, which contribute to Medicaid. And you pay to the federal government, which pays for both the tax-funded part of the U.S. system, which we call the Veterans Administration, which is 125 hospitals and all the ancillaries, and also funds the Medicare program, which is some 60 million Americans, as well as most of the Medicaid program. So that's all tax money that is collected in various ways. Is it very different in the U.S.? Not really.
Yeah, exactly. Except that there is this perception among most of us, because we have to choose insurance companies every year, either through our employers or through Obamacare or through the secondary Medicare system, that this is very complicated and that we have a lot of choice in it to either help ourselves financially or not help ourselves financially. Which you don't, I never hear that from my friends in the Czech Republic, for example. They never think about it. They know about the tax part of it.
You're saying something that is a long time topic of debate and discussion inside Sweden. Should you have choice at all? My writing partner, with whom I wrote several books about the way to use markets in healthcare, used to say, for a Swede, you only need two choices. They both just need to be good. I think if you told an American that you would only have two choices, they would be set by the government. Pick a government, local government, state government, national government, you would have nothing else that you could get, number one. And number two, very, very important factor in this, because care is provided by the public system in Sweden, as in England, as in Italy, we're talking about tax-funded delivery. Now we move from financing to the actual service struggle. You know, who owns the hospitals? Because the care is delivered by government entities, you cannot sue for malpractice. So what that means is Americans would have to take whatever choices they are given by the government, and they would have to get the care delivered to them at the standard the government decides on. We have two systems like that already, actually. I mentioned one, which is the Veterans Administration. Let's just say that it is highly disputable, the quality of care inside the Veterans Administration. And as soon as people are able to find some way out, including Medicare, they do not any longer go to the Veterans Administration, which is run by the national government.
Right,
the
but second, that we're going to talk about in a separate podcast.
Well, because I'm sure, but
so important point, to veterans.
Yeah, the point that I'm trying to make is that once you enter into the territory where government not only funds care, but government restricts your ability as to requiring you to get your care delivered by public government institutions, your degree of choice is dramatically contracted. And that's something that is not only problematic in the culture of the United States compared to the very, how do I put this, well-defined Lutheran culture in Sweden. It's something, secondly, that is very difficult to do in a country of 330 million people that extends a whole continent. Sweden is the population of the state of Georgia, and it is physically the size of California, although the northern part of Sweden has almost nobody in it. A lot of Swedes are very unhappy with the fact that they have one-year waiting lists for things like cancer care, that pregnant women cannot get the delivery services when they show up at the hospital and get sent to drive 200-300 miles when they're in labor in order to deliver. Now, you asked me about how does it compare to the U.S.
Right.
And that's a very fair question. And what I left out one part of Sweden, which is that now 10% of the population has private insurance. They pay for private insurance separately. In addition, in Sweden, there's a third category, which is occupational health, which is paid for by your company, and you actually get the care on site at the business. So there, you have these three dimensions. When you start to look at the United States, you'd say, well, we have three or four or five different ways in which care is funded, different levels of government, different private sector options that you were mentioning from employers with health insurance. In terms of delivery, we have government-run hospitals, local hospitals like Cook County Hospital or Boston City Hospital. We also have not-for-profit private hospitals, which are managed as benefit organizations for the local area. We have for-profit hospitals. We have national government-owned hospitals, the Veterans Administration being the major example. So just on the delivery side, we have similarities. On the funding side, we also would have similarities, although I guess what I'd say is the U.S. is more diverse, has multiple different funding arrangements, as befits a country that is 330 million people.
All right, let me just ask you something, because I'm thinking about this. So I'm like most Americans. I think we have strictly private, a private medical system. Kind of forget about Medicare being basically
it's a social insurance program.
Social insurance program,
like Germany.
Exactly. And yeah, that Medicaid is partially that, because some of that involves how much the states pay in, and the states pay different amounts in. Let's stop and explain, because an awful lot of people just, they sound too much alike, and nobody knows the difference.
Well, they were both passed in 1965 right, by Lyndon Johnson. They are both programs that are driven by national government legislation. Medicare is a social health insurance program, which means that you pay in to Medicare. Social health insurance means you pay in advance through premiums every year, and your employer pays through premiums every year. And that money is supposed to be set aside in what is euphemistically called a trust fund. And then that money is supposed to be available when you need care after age 65, because the decision in the compromise in 1965 that Lyndon Johnson put through was that Medicare only starts when you turn 65. It basically covers you after you are no longer covered by your employer insurance when right, you retire. That's the logic.
I think most people understand Medicare because someone in their family or they themselves now are using it, but Medicaid, no
right,
one.
Medicaid is, all right, let's go into that. The most important thing about Medicaid is it's a welfare program. It is not an insurance program. It is not a contributory program. It is not something that involves employers. It's a welfare program. It's like food stamps. You are given tax money by governments to provide for services. You also are at the mercy of what those governments choose to pay to the providers.
Okay, Medicaid is basically for the poor, and you have to be under a certain poverty
It's
level.
No longer for the poor. It's for those people who are on Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Under the Obama administration, Medicaid was dramatically increased, and Medicaid now is for a lot of middle-class people too.
Yeah, but that you're talking about, are you talking about Obamacare, which is in the middle?
No, I'm talking about Medicaid.
I'm
talking about Medicaid itself.
But where does Obamacare fit in?
Obamacare is for those people who are above the lower middle-class level that is for Medicaid. Then Obamacare is for middle-class people who have employers that don't provide health insurance, who may not have an employer, they may be unemployed. And what Obamacare is a form of subsidies to private insurance companies to take onto their roles these middle-class people who do not have, at that time, coverage. They are, in a way, they work together. And both programs are controlled, as is Medicare. All Medicare, Medicaid, and Obamacare are all run out of the federal government.
Again, I come back to my friends in the Czech Republic. I think now most European and Nordic systems are what I would call a hybrid system. They're beginning to pull in some parts of private systems if people can afford it.
They're starting to.
Yeah, they're starting to, because
with great difficulty.
Because the costs of medical care now are becoming out of sight for any country.
You're being kind. They're doing it because the population is getting bolshy. You know that word, bolshy?
No.
Like Bolshevik. It's an old term. It means that they're starting to sound like they're getting pre-revolutionary. The population in England is apoplectic at the fact that they have such a difficult time getting care from the British National Health Service. In Sweden, increasingly, people are getting apoplectic. In Norway, they had to change the whole system around in 2012 because the Norwegians were upset. Denmark, the fight is a regular cyclical fight. They restructured the system in Denmark in 2005. They've now had to restructure it again. Finland, they've been trying to restructure for 10 years. These are all tax-funded systems.
They're going to get probably, it's going to be harder to resolve them as the cost of medical care in general.
Let me put one more point on the table.
Richard, I'd like to pull you back to our system.
Well, but I'd like to just tie this up in a way that maybe is useful. And it's a point that I built a presentation to senior Swedish policymakers around 3 years ago, and they kind of looked thoughtful at it. Very simply, the structure of these government-run systems, and I would argue also in the U.S., but certainly in all four Nordic countries, as an example, and we haven't talked about Southern Europe, Spain, Italy, Portugal. The structure of those systems was conceptualized as part of what was in fact a prior industrial revolution. It was the management model based in the structure of electricity or electronics, the whole process of the middle 20th century. We are now, as a result of the last 30 years, very deep into the third phase of a third industrial revolution, which is the information revolution, which has completely upended almost all structures of decision making inside the delivery of healthcare. But what has not been allowed to change hardly any of the decision making on the financing side, on the governance side of the healthcare systems in Europe. So they are basically, they have structures from the previous industrial revolution, which they can't change. My quote on this, which got their attention, was from Barack Obama. Barack Obama is famous for saying, elections have consequences. What I was saying very simply was, industrial revolutions have consequences. This is the challenge to the European systems, which they have not yet met. And helps explain why for the United States or for you or for your listeners to talk about the Europe as an example that we then should follow really doesn't fit the actual factual situation anymore.
There's a lot more to this interview, and we'll have the second half where we focus on growing medical costs for all healthcare systems in January. I want to thank Dr. Richard Saltman, the podcast research expert, for coming on the show. Richard is Professor Emeritus of Health Policy and Management, Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta, and he wears many other healthcare policy hats as well. Obviously, we're just scraping the surface of this very, very complicated issue. As Richard has pointed out, I'm aiming for one new podcast a month. Usually it drops on a Tuesday. Updates wherever you get your podcasts. Please do subscribe. We're on Apple, Google, TuneIn, and on the Podbeam app. And the video version is on YouTube and beyond. I'm Stephanie Shelton, and until I see you again, please take care of yourself and those you love. Conversations on Health, How We Get There is produced and edited by Frank Harold. Research assistance from Dr. Richard Saltman, Professor Emeritus of Health Policy and Management, Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta.